Hello, this is the American Psychologist, live from Amsterdam, speaking to you regarding Outback, and particularly one program, the Digital Unplugged program, and how Outback Expeditions is different from other programs, unique, and meets the needs of kids who need to be digitally unplugged. Today, I'm speaking with McCabe and Trevor, who is a therapist. McCabe is the executive director of Outback, and Trevor is a field staff therapist who works in concert with all of the staff in bringing about exceptional changes, period. McCabe, if we can start with you, please just give me an overview as to how Outback is different and unique in the industry of outdoor wilderness programs.
Without love, these tiered task of ability for staff to just hand out consequences. So rather than a kid coming in and being like, okay, what the hell do I need to do to get out of this place? And rather than giving them this list of checklists, like this is what you need to do. That's why Outback is set up specifically towards the internal. And I know everyone says that. So let me go into why that actually works differently to do certain things. Then that just gives us the ability to assess and redirect from there. Okay, where do we need to go from there? What interventions might be helpful for this child, right? And your staff are forced to engage in a level that they otherwise wouldn't have. Far more individualistic, it has to be.
So the question then is, of course, is how do you measure success? So if it's say on a daily basis, so you have a clinical team meeting, I would think. You bring people together and you're talking about the kid and you're saying, this is where he's at today or where he's at for the week and this type of thing. And so then if you're going to change things around, if you don't have a graded level approach, then how do you measure progress? And so McKay was suggesting that the goals remain the same, it's the approach that's different. But and I'm saying, well, if you have a clinical meeting on Thursday and or Mondays, and you say, you know, this is how he acted last Friday, we're getting that report from the field staff. So what are we going to put into place, and how are we going to know that he's meeting those goals over by Wednesday or Thursday when we do kind of a summary? Is that sort of how you do it, or?
Because we have clinicians out in the field 24/7 with the kids. They're able to do kind of an in-the-moment assessment at all times, right? And so when the therapists go out there and they staff up with the staff slash therapist, the ability to transfer those clinical criteria that's going on out there is really a lot more efficient and effective, right? And so you're able to get kind of that data, that clinical data, and then and with that clinical data, you either, can discuss with the team that's out there, well, what kind of approach can we do differently? Or sure, bring it into the office and do that. But then you do have different type of interventions. For example, sometimes for kids that are hike refusing, which, you know, as a behavioral approach for a hike refusal would be, well, let's go ahead and, we'll do 10 pack drills. We'll have them write down 10 different coping mechanisms they could do instead of this current thing and shutting down, and da, 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 right? Again, has its benefit. You're teaching, you're redirecting, whatever, right? But instead of going that direction with that child, well, there's the potential of maybe pulling the rest of the group aside, right? Removing the audience, having this kid stay with the staff for a little while, and discussing what's gone on previous to this. Well, what letters did you receive this week? How's it gone on? So more of like a, let's do some investigative work, and then let's simultaneously have the group engage in something that's fun, inviting, and participative. And so they're kind of also, helping to lighten the mood, invite the kid towards participating again rather than shutting down. And so it's rather than meeting this wall with a wall going, I'm not going to hike. No, you will hike, right? I'm not going to hike. Hey, you know what? Let's just put that aside for now. No, it's really fun. Believe me. making your own backpack out of sticks and leather, putting everything you own on your back and hiking for 5 miles in the cold. It's a blast.
Yeah.
What we're doing is trying to make participating in the program attractive, mm-hmm. right? And so we do that not just by means of, you know, having the students play something fun or whatever, but mm-hmm. by means of approaching their value system,
yeah.
what's important to you, kind of a motivational interviewing approach,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But also just kind of a more dynamic approach.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, again, this head-on collision of
mm-hmm.
of values and trying to force them to see our values.
Right.
It's trying to help invite them to see that their values actually align with
mm-hmm.
what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that they have a support system here
mm-hmm.
to help them through their challenges.
Why not engage? It might be something that would be fun for me to do. How do I? Maybe my attitude is starting to change a little.
Personally, as Trevor, I'm not against like level systems, but I've worked in a level system. I've worked in agent-based. My personal opinion is it's not the tasks that they complete which verify if they're ready to go home, if they're ready for the next step. I've had students who are like on the highest level and looked amazing by the task that they could complete and were less prepared to go home than some of the kids who are early on. And what we oftentimes, the kid will come into the program and they'll be like, tell me what I need to do. I'll read the book, I'll do the assignment. And they'll have them completed in the first week. And then my job is like, let's slow it down and let's give you a chance to simmer and feel it. And it's more, I mean, we use the term a lot, way of being and their attitudes and those kind of things that show us more of their level of progress than the tasks that they can complete. And absolutely, in like a TBS, they've got to complete school, right? Like that's a necessary thing. And going along and working within the group milieu and therapy groups is really important, but it's the attitudes and it's the way of being that's behind it, which seems far more important than task completed. So,
mm-hmm.
and the task completed usually are the way that we, that a lot of the STEP programs say this is how you get to the next step.
I appreciate that, but I think that working with parents, the first thing they're gonna say is, okay, you hold the control in knowing when that, in how that individual is advancing through the program. How would I, as a parent, I have to trust you.
Trust is a huge part of therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even though we're not the parent's therapist, we're the identified patient's
mm-hmm.
therapist, the
mm-hmm.
student's therapist, you still have to build that same trust with the
mm-hmm.
parents. That therapeutic alliance goes with them too.
Mm-hmm.
And so just like any skilled clinician is going to do, you're going to try and build that in various ways,
mm-hmm.
one of which being that you're predicting the future
mm-hmm.
and that you're
mm-hmm.
that you're providing opportunities for them to see that you know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so with this child whom you don't know, you know, for certain because of the fact that they're all individuals,
mm-hmm.
but you do know patterns,
mm-hmm.
and you can kind of predict certain patterns like, okay, well, this is going to happen on week two. The way that he's behaving or the way that he's interacting with his peers suggests that he will behave this way in week three. So let's look for those types of signs and symptoms. And then when that comes around, it builds confidence. And so by the time that those recommendations or those, you know, the end comes near, there the trust is there.
So
it's
really kind of an in vivo assessment, then, isn't it? You're watching the pattern. You're watching the pattern assessment. You're watching how they
absolutely
respond to Gary and Beth and staff and therapists, and you're seeing them in different dynamics, and you're getting a view of what that pattern, how they reciprocate with others, and that sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely. I would say the two biggest things that you're going to get from Outback, number one, is an accurate assessment. Again, you're taking them from kind of their home,
mm-hmm.
where all their triggers are, and you know the unhealthy food and unhealthy sleep patterns,
mm-hmm.
and friends and all that stuff. You're taking them from that, putting them into a stable environment,
mm-hmm.
in which they're kept safe from any harm that they could produce themselves,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
and then you're giving them kind of a true baseline experience,
mm-hmm.
where everything is designed for a healthy environment around
mm-hmm.
them. And so not only are you doing that baseline experience, but then you're surrounding them with skilled clinicians 24/7 that are able to get that type of assessment that you can't get in a 50-minute session in a box.
So you must pay these therapists like tons of money to be out there 24/7.
We pay them a lot more than a field staff, yes.
Yeah. But that's unique. I mean, to have therapists in the field 24/7.
It's an additional cost that we find to be extremely beneficial, and which is why we basically just eat that cost.
Mm-hmm. I was speaking with Carol this week. She's one of our in-field therapists. Mm-hmm. She's EMDR certified. Mm-hmm. She has experience working with students who were part of like sex trafficking and significant experience, right? Mm-hmm. And she's also worked at Outward Bound. And so these are not people who just like came off the street. Mm-hmm. They've got some awesome experience. And mm-hmm. so again, to staff up and gather information from an in-field therapist versus a staff.
Well, that's good. That speaks to the quality of the staff.
They're amazing.
Yeah. So getting back to this digital piece again, because you know, I have a client right now who's kind of in the thick of it.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it and say, okay, so how do I speak to this parent about that unique program? I guess there was a 60 Minutes mm-hmm. interview, wasn't there, that I watched, mm-hmm. actually. I don't remember if it was 60 Minutes. I thought it was 60 Minutes.
It was 2020.
2020, that's what it was, yeah. But it sounded like it was unique in the manner in which it... Is it that unique, or is it playing upon principles that we've known as psychologists for decades, and we're just now applying it to a different format?
Part of both, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely, like, for example, detox and assessment are two steps, two things that I think we all kind of basically understand, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And Wilderness does a really good job, no matter what Wilderness right. you go to, at doing detox.
Yeah.
I'd say... therapeutic boarding schools and residential treatment centers do a little less good at that because they use those as kind of like carrots, mm-hmm. right? If you do this, then I'll give you that.
Yeah.
And so that's where we have to be somewhat careful as far as detox goes. It's not just it's not just a standard thing that happens. Mm-hmm. But in Outback, they go out there and they detox from that, and you'll see a physical withdrawal from these kids, mm-hmm. right? And you'll see those mental withdrawals.
Do they start chewing on the nails? What do they do?
Well, they
what's withdrawal look like?
A lot of times they become even more isolated from the group. They become very agitated with other people. It becomes something that after a few days becomes very apparent that, and they'll even start talking about it, and they'll dream about it, and mm-hmm. Kind of like a substance, right? Yeah. They'll have using dreams with this mm-hmm. stuff, and they'll mm-hmm. try and get their little fixes recreating the game in story form to their friends, and so they'll be out there and they'll try to create it in verbally with them.
You see obsessiveness with it. Right. They're obsessed. They wake up in the morning and first thing they want to talk about is their avatar, and their lunches are centered around their avatar, and it's actually an effort to try to help break some of that obsession and break it up with their thought. But absolutely, we're seeing a lot of those same principles.
And it's fired up by what? What's behind it, I guess, is the question.
I would say that just like a substance abuse disorder, oftentimes it begins with something else, right? Whether that be some attachment, some sort of depression, anxiety, something like that. It begins somewhere, mm-hmm. and then at some point, it becomes its own. It becomes the primary, right? What started as a secondary becomes its own primary. And I would say that we're seeing that a lot more with digital electronic addiction, is that it's starting to become, and even though the DSM doesn't recognize it yet, I mean, we have kids that come through here mm-hmm. that obviously they have the underlying things. They have autism spectrum disorder mm-hmm. that kind of lends itself towards this, mm-hmm. or they have, you know, some severe social anxiety mm-hmm. or severe depression or something that's mm-hmm. going on that's kind of lending itself towards mm-hmm. this. But then it becomes its own monster, mm-hmm. and now they're starting to afflict a lot of pain and conflict in the home. Mm-hmm. You know, killing their parents' pets because they took their digital electronics away, or you know, breaking granite countertops, or mm-hmm. you know, threatening to kill themselves and or attempting to kill themselves mm-hmm. because of those types of things. Right. So that's where it's not just depression anymore. Mm-hmm. This has become a bigger thing. It's become a part of the issue.
Racking up thousands of dollars on mom and dad's credit card. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it has its own reinforcement reward system that it brings about. I had a young man that was, you know, that basically holed up in his bedroom, right?
Right.
And the parents ended up having to bring the dinner up on a platter.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he wouldn't come down for dinner. And then, but if they attempted to make him come down for dinner, then he would punch holes in the drywall.
Right.
So to the point that they turned off, you know, this wireless system, the network, to which, and then he went to his neighbors to then bleed off of their network. So it was like a, I don't know if you ever watched, you know, Red Mad Magazine, where spy versus spy. You know, you're kind of like outwitting each other with the parents, and
it's insanity,
isn't it? It's total insanity.
Yeah.
And but the parents sometimes buy into this too. Absolutely. Which is the interesting part of the equation.
Well, that's the next piece, right? So there's the detox, and then there's the assessment. Which I just to talk on the assessment for a bit. I think because this is a new, it's not recognized in the DSM because it's a new. Part of our field and something that's becoming an issue. And you'll see, you know, I mean, obviously in the United States, there's very few treatment options for this, right? I mean, you look around and there's Restart for young adults, and they just started up an adolescent part as well.
Yep.
And then there's an inpatient hospital for young adults. They have like 6 beds somewhere. I can't remember, somewhere in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's us that deal with adolescents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really crazy considering the Asian part of the world. You have like, you know, 500 treatment centers that are government funded to address this issue because it's such a epidemic out there, right? And so you're starting to see that a little bit, some of that coming up in the United States, but it's not quite there yet, right? So the assessment is really important because what oftentimes we see is this secondary issue, and again, it starts off as a secondary issue. What oftentimes we see is the secondary issue is treated as a secondary issue, right? Let's hyper-focus on the depression. Let's hyper-focus on the anxiety. And sure, let's give you some coping skills and tell you to, you know, to do something a little bit different here and there, but we're not going to arm you like we would if it were a primary issue. And so that's how we treat it. In fact, most of our parents, I wouldn't say most, but it's not uncommon for our parents to come here and to say things like, I went to so many different psychologists and I could not get any of them to agree with me that this was an actual issue.
Wow.
And I'm like, I'm on the phone with these parents before they come and they're telling me this. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me, right? Because they're telling the same stories that you're telling.
So they're
breaking things.
They're not really working with the family then. It's not, because if it's not an issue, it's not a problem for the family. But the family knows it's a problem.
Sure.
They're living it, right?
And they're contributing to it often.
And how do they contribute?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, some parents are like, my kid's not smoking weed and he's not arguing with the teacher.
There you go.
He's doing pretty well. Endorsements. And you're like, but he's not talking to anybody and he's not engaging with the family. And if he's not doing drugs, he's doing pretty well.
Well, and it's the choose your battles mentality, right? Like, because he's not doing weed, just because he's spending 10 hours a day and he's missing some school, he's still got, like, you know, D's and C's. So, you know, we're going to let Johnny go with this.
Well enough alone.
Yeah. Right. It could be worse.
Yeah.
Right?
How do you strengthen the family then? What's the family piece in this then? What's the family to work on? What does that look like? Because I can get, they go through the detox, they have to kind of do some replacement therapy, I would think would be kind of the way to think of this. You're replacing, you know, the social withdrawal with some reintegration and learning skills, social skills, and this type of thing, which is formatively what the issue is. There's a decrease of one versus an increase of the other. So you hope that there's enough satisfaction in having these relationships, real relationships versus entertaining virtual relationships, that the kid kind of goes, you know, I think I can live in this world again now that I feel better about myself. I have more competencies. What about the families? What's the work that they do with Outback?
Sure. So in designing this program, we worked with some of the national experts in trying to figure out, because again, there is no prescribed, there's no DBT for borderline, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like kind of the known thing. Well, if you have borderline, do DBT.
Yeah.
There is none of that for this, right? And so as we worked with some of the national leading experts in trying to design a program specific to that, we actually got one of... the co-authors of a book that someone that they use at Restart. Actually, Kim McDaniels and Hillary Cash wrote a book, and we we worked with Kim McDaniels in designing kind of a parent curriculum that helps them go from this place of enabling to this place of empowering. From this place of like we must have high tech to how can we live with low tech?
Right.
And so helping them transition their mindsets to seeing this as no, you know, we are living with an addict in some cases, right? Not all kids that struggle with electronic overuse. I would call addiction. That's a part of the assessment. Is where are they at? Right. But some of them truly have reached that level where I would call them an addict. And so, you know, we're trying to help those families find out where they're at, and then to meet their child where they're at. Right. Mm-hmm. So if we have the child, the puzzle piece out of the puzzle, we've reshaped the puzzle piece, helping them arm them with tools and equipment. Then we need to reshape the puzzle so that it fits back into the puzzle piece. And so that's kind of where that comes into play. It's kind of those two different aspects. Does that make sense?
So there's a curriculum piece to this that the parents are going to be following while they're watching what's happening within the program. They're doing their own piece on this, and that was designed specifically for this digital program. What do you call the digital program? What is that?
Unplugged.
Unplugged is what it is.
Yeah.
So it's unplugged, got it. Okay.
In addition to that, so there's the unplugged manual specific, but we also have Aries who is doing the webinars weekly, and so it's another area of how we can help strengthen the parents, where we might talk about parenting styles, we might talk about,
the
collusion process with the students.
Yeah, they talk about a bunch of basic psychological aspects, you know, the different family systems dynamics and the communication styles and, you know, things like that for sure that lead into those areas.
Is that downloadable then, or they can just, it's on demand where they can watch that?
It's live.
We do save
it if a family misses it, but it's live and the families attend once a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So working with international families, it sounds like if they're kind of up against, you know, what to do with a young person that's suffering from some of this addiction to the digital devices, the device of digital age, then this is a, 8-week program? Is that fair to say?
Eight to ten weeks is kind of our average.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's formally a therapeutic program, so there's psychologists and LCSWs and LPCs, I think, is what you have probably too, and such. But you're trained in family systems, you're trained in individual, in group counseling, but diagnosing conditions as well, so that they can expect to get treatment and then getting an aftercare discharge plan that hopefully works with somebody such as myself to then look at what the next step is going to be, because it's not just enough to do the work here. It takes the village, and we make sure that everybody moves forward to the next spot successfully.
Absolutely.
This is all great. So McCabe and Trevor.
Yeah.
This has been the American Psychologist from Amsterdam.